the sounds of a struggle here. So, my name is Aaron Ryan.
My name's Bill Cundiff. What do we got going on today, Aaron?
Well, Bill. So I thought I would point out that we have some good stuff on the site for you today that you're probably going to want to go read. We're talking about AI today, but from kind of two different, a little bit different vantage points, and it's not what you think, maybe. First hour, we're talking about the, the title of his article is The Modern-Day Tower of Babel and the Centralization of Evil, Ethical Implications of AI, with our friend Nathan Deshmaker. And then the second hour, which is what prompted me to kind of have the conversation with Nathan when he called me about something totally different, Joel Gilbert has done a documentary film about his former boss, Al Gore. He worked for him in the Senate. And
He predicted all the climate stuff, and he was right.
And Joel Gilbert's like, yeah, such a fraud. Just such a fraud, plagiarized his book and all sorts of other stuff. But he took kind of an interesting tack, and he decided to interview AI Al Gore. So he has done a documentary of that, which is really pretty fun. There's a clip there on the site. So today is January 5th. Welcome to the Brave New Year. And 2025, I guess I should be clear. So if you go to January 5th, 2025 at wethepeopleradio.us, there are people trying to copy us. Can you believe it? They've like stolen our name and tried to like, you know, make other things that sound like us. But we're into year number 15, so we've been there longer than the rest of them. But you can look at Nathan's article, which is really very good, and you'll be able to find all the information on Joel and his documentary and link to some clips of that. So, without further ado, our friend Nathan Deshmaker and his family, they raise registered feeder calves in central Montana. They're kind of moving, maybe, but it's not very far, so I think this information will stay the same. He's a senior research associate and policy analyst specializing in federal and local government administrative procedures. The thing that everybody wishes they had in their community, because most of us are not experts in that. So he's an expert in local government administrative procedures, land and natural resource policy making, local government relations, and program management. He's also an accomplished musician and a self-taught theologian with a love for the classics. He's worked with local governments to identify and challenge attacks on small farms and ranch operations, facing increased pressure and regulation by forces and groups outside of Montana, and many, and oftentimes outside the U.S., and if you live in a rural area, your community is facing this too, especially in the West. It's a huge, huge problem, and we all need more guys like Nathan. Hey, so Nathan, before we launch off on the topic, do tell what was the catalyst that I guess maybe that's sort of a good pun there. What was the catalyst that got you going? Was it the cattle? Like in all this?
I missed the last part you said there, the catalyst and what?
Yeah, what was the catalyst to get you, you know, kind of looking at all of this? Because you've been doing this for a while. How long?
In relationship to working with local governments and associations to engage on federal land use issues and regulations, it's a good 7-8 years. And a couple years prior to that, you know, studying into those issues, but active engagement on a variety of land use issues and different federal agencies. Been doing that work for close to a decade, like I said, about 8 years, and staying plenty busy, especially the last 4 years, for sure.
Yeah, last 4 years has been a challenge for everyone. Hey, before we go further and people bash their heads on their desks, your sound is kind of goofed up. It's like a little bit of a tin can telephone sort of a thing.
How about now?
That's pretty good, and maybe move the microphone just a teeny bit, because it's, you know, making the puffing sound.
Okay, well, I do have
look at you. There you are.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Well, let me know if it keeps doing that or gets weird, because I do have a headset on, and if it's weird sound, I can always just jump on the phone and remove the headset if it's weird sounding.
Whatever you adjusted turned you from miniature Tiny Tim Nathan to regular full-size human Nathan. That was AI Nathan that opened the show. He's fake, though. So, we read your article, and so we'll shut up now because this is a subject we haven't tackled before, really. And your vantage point is interesting on this. So take people on your journey with AI.
Yeah, well, I guess it ties back to your first question of how I got involved in the work I do. AI came onto my radar in the last couple of years because we engage agencies on land use and different regulatory processes. And as we were engaging on Forest Service monitoring and the old growth forest plans and sage grouse across 10 states, and then the solar push to open up a bunch of BLM lands for solar development. In engaging on those issues and looking into and equipping the record on those items, came across with a couple with a county that came across the fact that Department of Energy has what's called the Argonne National Laboratory in Illinois, which is a large data center, which happens to be contracted with various agencies, BLM, Forest Service, and others, and in relationship to the solar system environmental impact statement that BLM worked on and finalized recently in opening up 30 million acres of public lands in the West to solar development, that entire programmatic environmental impact statement was developed through Argonne National Laboratory. So that was kind of the beginning point with me. I was familiar with developments in AI a little bit and what was kind of taking place. And as soon as it came onto my radar that artificial intelligence or large learning data centers are being utilized to write programmatic environmental impact statements, which establish regulation and policy affecting huge swaths of lands, especially in the West, I started to think about that and study into it more because there's, you know, if we want to, the Congress requires public process, local engagement, coordination and cooperation with local cooperating agencies, county governments, in implementing regulations, policies, and rules. And if these agencies, and those programmatic EISs are supposed to be written by people, in the field offices, in cooperation with local governments, identifying on the ground issues. But if they're using large language model systems and data centers to draft these documents, there's a huge danger in that process that ultimately removes the public from the public process. These data centers, Argonne National Laboratory, an example, you know, they can even simulate public comment and public involvement in those processes. So that was kind of the beginning point of me starting to, and that was probably a year and a half, 2 years ago, coming across that. And then we addressed those issues in substantive comments that we put forward on the old growth plans for the Forest Service and some other items. But personally, I started, you know, researching a little more and trying to understand the implications of these AI systems as they come online. So that led to a journey of studying through those things. And as you said, the article that's accessible, I'll discuss some of the content in that article today on the program. But it started, you know, the article is more philosophical and deals with broader issues. But for me, it started with just the implications of having federal agencies using these computer model systems to, I mean, we already have enough, like the Al Gore and climate change, all the computer models that do all that, when they start using these modeling frameworks and large language computer frameworks to draft policy and regulation, it's very concerning, to say the least.
Yeah, we've seen how great that's worked out for all of us over the past few years. We had also spoken, and I don't know if you're going to bring that up later, but the amount of land that will be required to wheel the power. I was speaking with someone this morning while I was walking the dog, and he said, "Oh, so what's on the show today?" And I was giving him a little thumbnail sketch, and I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, you know, it uses about the same amount of power as like the supercomputers." And I'm like, "Yeah, I think we're not actually prepared for the amount of power we're going to be needing." We just want to make sure we fit that in somewhere before the end.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that leads to the next step of how I got more involved in understanding the implications of AI developments. Is so it started with the programmatic solar systems they want to push and are pushing on our public lands. And then later I did some work with some counties in Kansas and some other associations. Department of Energy put forward a phase two of putting 3-mile wide corridors across Kansas and even larger corridors that ran up into the Nebraska, Dakotas, and some into Texas and a little bit into Colorado and Missouri that stretched out to Illinois. And Department of Energy in doing this, their justification for these corridors, and the corridors essentially would be a federal designation that would allow Department of Energy to bypass state and local permitting authorities to site transmission systems. Because with the build-out of all this wind and solar, there is no grid in place to take on those loads and to ship that electricity to end-use consumers. So Department of Energy projected significant congestions and constraints on the grid as a result of two things, or three things, there's more, but three primary things, and that is all this build-out of renewable energy, and also the big push to bring AI data centers online. And for your audience, you know, now you go on your smartphone and you look something up and you always have at the top the AI answer, you know, and you're starting to see it in commercial advertising more so now. AI is the new thing. But a single AI generated response takes 10 times as much energy as a traditional Google search. So it takes a massive amount of electricity to fuel these systems. And so when Department of Energy came out and we're pushing these corridors, and I already had a little bit of an understanding of what AI was doing and these AI systems and where they wanted to go with them, and the fact that they want to put these big swaths across states and counties to accommodate the transmission systems for tying this all together. But ultimately, AI data centers cannot be ran on the grid. So what's happening is there's big pushes for using off-grid natural gas systems to fuel nothing but these data centers. And that's happening in North Dakota, and I can touch on that in a minute. But, yeah, the energy consumption of these systems is massive. There's like $150 billion of proposed development of these systems in North Dakota alone. And the energy requirement for those systems is like six times the amount of output that the Coal Creek power station is currently putting out. So there's massive amounts of energy demand with these systems. And the question is, we currently have, you know, AI, quote-unquote, available to us for various purposes and data. And there's nothing wrong with data and computing data and different things. But the question is, why are these individuals, Bill Gates and other wealthy elite individuals, wanting to massively expand these computing systems, and ultimately to what end is the question I've been asking.
Well, Bill Gates, you mentioned him. I read an article a few weeks ago that he's proposing to purchase Three Mile Island and use it solely for AI energy production. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I have. I haven't looked into that significantly, and I know there's big pushes to look for nuclear. I think with that, they're looking at maybe trying to do some the nuclear basis to fuel that. So yeah, I am familiar with that. Gates is very cozy. So Doug Burgum is has been the governor in North Dakota over the last couple terms, and he has opened his arms pretty widely to these types of approaches, even carbon sequestration, even jumped onto the net zero bandwagon somewhat, which is kind of concerning because Trump's appointed him, or he's not confirmed yet, but that's the potential appointee for Department of Interior. And Burgum, you know, I think is not all bad in that he realizes we need baseload electricity and et cetera. But there are some concerning things there because Burgum had a software company, Great Plains Software Company, that he sold to Bill Gates in the early thousands, 2001, somewhere in that ballpark, for like $1.1 billion. And then he went on to serve as a senior vice president in Microsoft until 2007. And then, obviously, later he became the governor of North Dakota.
Wow.
And that's one of the reasons that Bill Gates, I believe it's Gates and some others that are really pushing and the arms are open with North Dakota to be host to these types of AI computing systems. And even the North Dakota State Commerce Commissioner, Josh Tagan, told the Public Service Commission that some data center companies have individually valued products at $135 billion, demanding power loads equivalent to more than the output of six Coal Creek power stations. And they're even contemplating using, like I said earlier, off-grid natural gas plants to fuel these data centers. And the Department of Commerce told the Public Service Commission that off-grid natural gas plants, instead of natural gas being shipped to other states via pipeline, it would be consumed by data centers and data would be transported instead. And that's part of the ethical implications of this because
Hold that thought, Nathan.
Go ahead.
Before we pivot there, just because we've got to take a break. And then we'll be right back. Our guest is Nathan Dishmaker. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Thanks, Bill.
Hey, you bet.
Winter getting colder, summer getting warmer, tidal wave come across the Mexican border. Why buy a gallon? It's cheaper by the barrel. Just don't get busted singing Christmas carols. American ride. Both ends of the ozone burning. Funny how the world keeps turning. Look, Ma, no hands. I love this American ride. Gotta love this American ride.
We're the children of explorers. We came here from every corner. The adventurers that settled this land. Let's do that again.
There we go. All right. Back to Nathan.
We're back. So just to pick up and conclude what I was saying, that's one of my concerns is I'm all about drill, baby, drill and accessing oil and gas and carbon-based resources for end-use electricity to fuel appliances and people's homes and our equipment and vehicles. And electricity, but I don't know if I'm all in on taking massive off-grid systems to fuel nothing but these data centers. It seems to me like if we go down that trajectory, you and I, the ratepayers and consumers of electricity in our households, will be left with wind and solar panels, and then these big AI data centers will consume carbon-based energy sources to generate these large language computer database systems, which is very concerning as well because, like I said, the whole constraints and congestions on the grid that Department of Energy is projecting is a result of these things. The last 10 years of end use of electricity, household electricity, well, last 20 years actually, has been relatively stable at hovering around maybe just under 4,000 terawatt hours in end use electricity, and that's been pretty stable for 20 years. So these projections of these big increases of energy demand are all policy driven, either through the renewable energy they're citing everywhere or through the desire to bring online these large artificial intelligence data centers. And there's also some crypto mining that comes along with this as well, with Bitcoin and other things, with data centers that generate all that as well. But we're not going to go on that way. That's a whole other thing. But so that's one ethical implication, in my opinion, is I don't know if we should be – we already have increased rates for our energy costs going up because there's a war on our oil and gas sector and on our coal estate. So I think there needs to be some pressure within this coming administration to make sure that we have access to those resources for end-use electricity, not just for pushing into these large data centers that could, like discussed earlier, consume just a massive amount of electricity and energy.
Yeah, I don't think that's something that people really... Give the numbers again on the differential between like regular, is it 10 times more to look something up through AI than it is to look it up just through Google? Is that what you said?
Yeah. An AI generated result takes about 10 times as much energy as a traditional Google search on a search engine. Mm-hmm. So those computer systems, they're huge facilities, and they have to, those computer systems scour. There's also dangers too, because like with back to climate change, and this will tie into the next hour. A lot of information out there, data, is entrenched misinformation, in my opinion. And as the next hour will show, you have Al Gore and all these people that have been putting reports and documentation, the UN and the IPCC reports that have put out. So there's also dangers in entrenched misinformation where AI systems, they just groom and glean all that data that's available and generate these responses. But if you don't have a free market context of these systems, and even with it, you still have a high potential of having entrenched disinformation that's fed back to the person who's searching whatever it may be, or if you're searching climate change or man's contribution to climate change. And maybe I need to do that. I haven't done that specifically with some of these AI systems because I don't really use them that much at all personally, but I've read articles where people that are much more versed in this than I am are pointing to those concerns as well as the entrenched disinformation on various topics. And it also just feeds into a non-thinking populace. Instead of having to research and do your own homework and come to your own conclusions, there's a computer that can do all that for you.
Yeah, that's the part that kind of frightens me is people go online and do a search. That's pretty much the gospel. That's all they need to know.
Well, then they regurgitate it as their own.
Yeah.
It's funny, there's a guy we get emails from, very annoying. But I noticed a long time ago that the language wasn't correct. it was like he was a foreign speaker, which is fine, but I know he's not. So I thought, I decided a long time ago he was using AI for everything. And mm-hmm. it was funny. We were at a thing, and he's like, I use AI all the time. It's like, oh, that's how you send those, like, insanely long, ridiculous emails loaded with bloviating, just, you know what I mean? Like, they're not communication. It's just like, it's kind of like written vomit. It just comes shooting out. And because he puts in an idea and then just boom, sends it all to you.
Yep.
Yeah, that's not a good trend. It's definitely not a good trend, because that doesn't make anybody smarter. I know I'm definitely dumber after reading those emails. so just on my one small example, I'm pretty sure the IQ will start to mimic the movie that used to be comedy that's now become a documentary, Idiocracy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And for those of you that have never seen Idiocracy, you really need to find it in the Wayback Machine and watch it, because, we're fast approaching.
Well, I watched an interview, it's been several months ago, and I don't remember who the person was, but they said in our school system, teachers are using AI to generate quizzes for the kids. The kids are using AI to answer the questions, and then when the teacher gets the test back, she uses AI to grade the questions. So what is really being learned in our school systems? I mean, it's crazy. They just push a button, and there's the answer.
It's a Pavlovian universe. You press the button, and the cookie comes out.
Yeah, that's kind of scary.
Are you still homeschooling, Nathan?
Yeah, we homeschool so far, yep.
Good call.
So
your kids will be the last smart kids out there.
No, we're about sourcing information, and it's not that, you know, AI may have some accurate information or whatever, but, and like you guys allude to, there's problems just with Google and internet searches to begin with, and being totally reliant on these feedbacks, which the algorithms are a lot of times biased. I mean, historically, you know, 15 years ago, Google and YouTube, I mean, you could find all sorts of alternative information, excellent videos, but all that's been so, you can't even find a lot of that, those good videos and information that used to be readily accessible on those platforms, because they've brought in all these algorithms. And we saw that through COVID. Look what they did through COVID. I mean, you have to be a good researcher just to find the doctors and the different people that are putting out excellent literature that's giving alternative perspectives and treatments and protocols, because if you go to Google and try to find it, if it's there at all, it's buried so far back that most people will never see it. All they see is the top hits, which are, you know, go get vaccinated, mask up, social distance, you know, just the conventional responses.
Yeah, the incredible rise of myocarditis is all fake. All fake.
Yeah. You know, so based on what we've just experienced in the last 4 years with the medical lockdowns in the world and different things, that's another concern for getting these AI systems to where they want to get them to, is, in my opinion, if they had what they want to accomplish with these AI systems in place, it would have exacerbated those issues to a significant degree. Because even the most intelligent among us, if we're cut off from alternative information, can't totally avoid that kind of propaganda. See, it's not the, and the danger too with this is it lends to more of a socialistic communist system of governance too, because communism requires shutting off alternative information. They want lockstep processes and people that don't ask any questions or divert away from the status quo. But a free society actually requires that. It requires people that are independent thinkers and come to their own conclusions and use scientific inquiry and research to challenge the mainstream. And that's always been essential for preserving life, liberty, and property in free societies. And and the danger with an AI-type system is it gives elite people and governments potentially, because you know once these things come fully online to the degree they want them to, the government's not likely to just leave them in a free market context. There's going to be a clampdown and regulatory control, or that'll be the effort anyways. And if they accomplish that, they ultimately will accomplish a centrally planned economy, which is the age-old goal of communism and socialism. Because ultimately, if you study the Austrian economists like Friedrich Hayek and Mises and others, their biggest argument against a centrally planned economy is the impossible knowledge requirements. No one person or group of people have the knowledge to be able to compute and understand all the different spontaneous actions of individuals in the market. So AI machine learning systems pose a formidable effort by elites to implement the framework and harness the energy necessary to establish a single mind process in order to surpass those impossible knowledge requirements. And as a result, that planning movement, just like the old communist central planning efforts, starts out with goodwill and noble intentions to control things, but invariably ends up by controlling men. So that's, those are, and here's the question. If artificial intelligence makes the crucial economic decisions, how can responsibility be assumed for the consequences of those decisions? And what device will the state measure the social costs, which it is often alleged that the individuals ignore? And none of those questions have been answered. It's just, let's build the systems, let's create the frameworks. But those are the, so those are the types of things I bring forward in this article is, well, what are the ethical implications to this? With this constant effort for communist pushes for centrally controlled economy, and controlled information, etc. So the article really delves into those sides of it. And hence the title, The Modern Day Tower of Babel and the Centralization of Evil. And actually, the reason I chose the Tower of Babel analogy is because if you remember the Genesis account in Genesis, God, when the people came together, the Lord said, "Behold, the people are one, and they have one language, and this they begin to do, and nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do." And then shortly thereafter, God come down and confused the languages and spread those people, the people groups, across the face of the planet, which was a way in which God decentralized evil in the world by separating the people groups by language into different geographical regions. So one of the things with artificial intelligence, the term is artificial singularity, and that's the point at which AI computing systems can translate language at the rate of a human being. So, and another term is artificial general intelligence. So the danger there is, hence the analogy to the Tower of Babel. I mean, this whole system will also serve as an attempt to do away with the language barriers of the peoples of the world, which, like I said earlier, the reason God separated the peoples across the face of the planet was to decentralize the ability for man to accumulate and centralize power and evil. So there's a concern there as well on doing away with the language barriers, which I think are important. We have different countries and sovereign nations and different people groups, which help preserve liberty in different places in the world. These AI systems pose an approach that would reconsolidate language into a single language in a way that it would very much look like a modern day Tower of Babel.
Mm-hmm. I think that's something that we don't think about, the implication of the uniform language. We look at the level of control, and the level of control is the part that I think catches everybody. Like, hey, wait a second.
You're seeing more and more devices now that can read foreign language and translate it to your language. There are devices that when somebody speaks a foreign language, it'll translate it into your into your device, and you hear it in your language. And it's like you said, it's fast as and probably faster than what a human can.
Which is super helpful, I mean, for communication and stuff, but the implication of taking away, we're talking about sovereignty at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, you no longer have countries thinking for themselves because now we're all one big happy family. And, you know, George Soros just got the Presidential Medal of Freedom, so obviously.
I was glad to see that.
Obviously that has no value anymore. We have to take a really quick break on that depressing note, and we'll be right back with our guest, Nathan Dashmaker. You are listening to We the People. It's January 5th, 2025. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Science. I love my classes. I got a crazy teacher. He wears dark glasses. Things are going great, and they're only getting better. I'm doing all right, getting good grades. The future's so bright. I gotta wear shades. I gotta wear shades.
Sounds pretty frightening, but you know the chances are so small. Stuck by beast. Ain't nothing but a bee thing. Better chance you're gonna buy it at the mall. But it's a 23-4-1 that you can fall in love by the end of this song. So get up, tell the bookie to bet I'm not a damn thing will go wrong. The odds are that we will probably be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright tonight. The odds are that we will probably.
It's kind of what we were talking about on the break, Nathan. We're like, so, do you think they'll do what they do with everything else? Overreach, go berserk, and then everyone will finally figure it out and push back?
Yeah, well, that's yet to be known on where this all leads. You know, and technology is amoral. I mean, it's neither good nor evil in and of itself, but we know that there's wealthy and elite people that are evil, that want to invest in these things. So the motivations, of course, it's useful to us, you know, for various purposes and using and in a variety of areas in life. But we need to step back, though, and be aware of where these things can lead. And the interesting thing is we have the same warnings from men in the 30s and 40s and 50s just with television and just the advent of some of the technological advancements in those days. For example, A.W. Tozer was a pastor in Chicago, and in the 40s he wrote in his book, he said, "Put chains on a man's ankles and wrists and he knows it. Look deep into his eyes and you will find there the sullen revolt of the free human spirit against the bonds of slavery. But conditioning the mind creates a slave who does not know it. We are constantly being fed harmful ideas that we adopt and learn to believe in, thinking they are all right, and so we ignorantly follow. This is done without our knowing that a keen, sharp, unscrupulous mind is seeking to control us." So that's coming from a pastor in Chicago in the 40s. And then you realize NATO issued a report in 2020, a NATO-sponsored report entitled Cognitive Warfare, where they explicitly said the new tools and techniques combined with the changing technological and information foundations of modern societies are creating an unprecedented capacity to conduct virtual societal warfare. So the war and battles that we're going to face in this century are in the mind. And from a Christian perspective, that's always been the case. The battle is ultimately the mind. So, and that's why these theologians through history wrote about that and why it has so much relevancy to the technological age that we live in today. So it's very interesting.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier, especially like we were speaking during the break about the idea that you're fed the same stuff over and over and over and over, and through the AI implications that we've been discussing, let's say you cull out all of that that other information that causes you to question. How, I mean, I don't know that anybody's had that much control at any given time, but how long does that take before pretty soon, you know, there is no...
There's one answer for everything.
Well, I guess Atlas Shrugged was sort of, you know, without the AI, you know, you saw what happened there. You had some holdouts, and I think we always will, but will they be such a small minority that they can't, you know, that they don't have enough influence? I think will be the that'll be the true test.
Are there any?
Nathan,
when you go online, you're doing a search or you're doing research on something. Are there any red flags that stand out that you need to be aware of to know that you're?
My red flag is AI wants to give you an answer. And I'm like, no, thank you.
Yeah, but a lot of times they don't come right out and say that. How do you know if this is just an AI generated response? Is there anything you need to look for?
You know, that's a tough question. I guess the way I would answer that is the best antidote to any misinformation, whether it's artificial intelligence or just some person propagating propaganda and misinformation, is you personally need to be rooted in fundamental principles.
Mm-hmm.
And have discernment. So from a spiritual perspective, this is critical for that, and that's how we decipher information. And even in government, you know, when we deal with federal agencies, it's the same thing there. Is the question isn't whether or not this is right or wrong. The question is, do they even have the authority to do it?
Yep.
Where are the principles of enumerated powers that gives this agency to act that way to begin with?
Right.
Whether you agree with what they're doing or not is irrelevant. Are they functioning according to first principles? And that's how I cut through all the bureaucracy when I engage on policy issues and regulations. Is you can't just read hundreds of thousands of pages of bureaucratic documents. But you identify what they're pushing, what they're saying, and the authorities they're claiming, and you contrast that with the first principles of good government. And it, like I said, irregardless of whether you agree with what they're doing or not, if it breaks with first principles, they shouldn't be doing it. And I think it's the same principle with, like you're saying, with information and just personally looking at information. And the good news is they can't totally control information as long as we have a Bible and books on our shelf where we can reference and have those alternative sources. But the danger is we're losing bookshelves too and everything else to these AI systems and computer systems. Everything's digitized now. But I don't know if that answers your question specifically, but that's what I would say is individually you need to be rooted in first principles. You need to know who you are as an individual. If you're a believer, you should know your God. Jesus said, "My sheep will not go after the voice of a stranger."
Hmm.
So we need to be in tune to the truth. And when we're tuned to the truth, we're able to discern falsehood and that which is not and it's deceptive. I mean, it wouldn't be deception
Well, you know, the other part of it too, the other facet of this, and we saw that in 2020, that was all driven just I'd say 90% of all of that insanity was driven by fear. And so for me, as soon as they come at me with fear, I'm like, okay, you're probably lying. I mean, unless, you know, I can hear really loud noises in the background and they tell me that there's, you know, something happening. It's like, okay, I kind of believe your crackling noises and it gets really hot, probably a fire. But I guess I'd run out of the house then. But fear is a powerful, powerful tool. And it was really interesting, the homily at church a week or two ago. And I don't know why I didn't know this. I mean, I'm old. I've been going to church a long time. And he pointed out that there were 365, not 66 or 64, but 365 specific references in the Bible that say, be not afraid.
Yep.
And he's like, obviously, those are there because fear not is the message 365 days a year.
Once a day.
And it was like, yeah. Huh. Well, apparently, he said that is the most referenced message throughout the entire thing. And I thought, well, I guess that's fairly clear. If you get nothing else out of it, pull that. But the fear is always the tool.
Absolutely. Fear, and the command is to fear not. And the other side of that, not only was it fear, but it was love your neighbor. They took what all of us would, in the general context of things, agree with, love your neighbor as yourself. So if you don't wear a mask, you don't love your neighbor. if you don't get vaccinated, you don't love your neighbor. And so therein lies a deception. And even what's ironic is you had unbelievers using the Bible to coerce Christians into things that they, through fear and other mechanisms. So first there's the fear, and then it's like, oh, you're supposed to love your neighbor. You should do that. And I have people that told me that aren't even believers. It's like, it's very ironic that unbelieving people resort to certain things like that to push that. And then it guilt trips you, and if you're not well established, into going down a pathway that may not be the best and may not be the most loving either. Because love confronts things. And with the fear side, the verse I think of is, you know, Jesus said, do not fear man who can kill your body, but fear the Lord who has the power over life and death in your soul. So if we're aligned there, we shouldn't fear what people can do to us and what the world can do. We need to have our hearts, minds, and affections set on the things above. Because ultimately, what I see in all this AI stuff and everything, everything is pushing towards globalism.
Yes.
And thankfully, we have an administration coming in and a pretty good election that took place that I think is a reprieve to that, and maybe we can turn the tide somewhat. But the fact is, there's still the momentum is still towards globalism. So we need to be aware of that, and that's a good way, I guess, to summarize the talk on that is don't be afraid and understand the truth, be established in first principles, and read a book every now and again. Open, get a good book and read it.
yeah, and don't give them up. Don't count on only the other ones. It's funny because Christina gave me this little, I don't know if it's a meme or what, but it said, I want AI to do my laundry and dishes so I can do art and writing. Not for AI to do my art and writing so I can do my laundry and dishes. And so I guess...
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, let's use these things as tools to improve our life, not run it. You know, I don't want the computer to run my life. It's a great enhancement, but let's keep it there. I know we're going to talk about this at a different time, but we need to also speak about the massive implications of land use in order to wheel the amount of power that'll be required for this type of technology. Because that's, I think, something that people will ultimately see, but they should be sort of geared up for, because it'll hit them like a ton of bricks.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of farm ground, a lot of counties, a lot of states that are in the way of massive transmission buildouts, and BLM just approved opening up 30 million acres of public lands to wind to solar development, utility scale solar systems. So,
terrific.
Likely, hopefully, that's going to be squashed and dealt with the Trump administration, but that's yet to be seen. And so, yeah, that could be a follow up conversation for sure on just the land use side of this, on the footprint of the policy trajectories that
Yeah.
There's a lot of people and farms in the way.
And to give people some tools, because when those meetings come, there are tools to kind of peel that apart, and that you should go. We have to let you go because we're going to have the news and blah, 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 and you have a day to have. So, Nathan Deshmaker, you are a wealth of information, and we thank you for coming on with us.
Yeah, it was a great show. Thanks for the information, Nathan.
We will be right back with AI Al Gore.
I'm having a ball.
Don't stop me now.
If you wanna have a good time.